My beloved brethren and sisters in Christ Jesus and friends, the man of God, a man of leisure, it almost sounds like an oxymoron. People in our society strive for increase in leisure time. A four-day work week, shorter work days, Monday holidays, early retirement, more vacation time, etc., etc. With this change from working from sunup to sundown as they used to in bygone years, there has sprung up a whole industry providing exciting ways for us to spend our leisure time. I check into the motel, even in Stonewall, and there's a whole magazine of opportunities for me to spend my leisure time. As we see society changing around us, how does the man of God or the woman of God fit into this movement, this change in our society? 200 to 300 years ago, there was a revolution against those who lived in leisure. This revolution was against the ruling class and the church, which was tied to the state. The common workers protested and revolted against the church state. They became known as the protesters or the Protestants. They established what has become known as the Protestant work ethic. The common workers rebelled against the life of leisure led by the rich, and they extolled the virtues of hard work. Shortly after this came the Industrial Revolution, which standardized work and the number of hours that a person was expected to work. This fit nicely into the Protestant view of exonerating work. It was easy to tell if somebody was putting in a full day's work or if there was a slacker. You could time them. Did they work their full number of hours that was expected of them this week? And they used the Bible for support, as they did for most of their dogmas. 1 Timothy 5:8. But if any man provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he is denied the faith. He is worse than an infidel. Or 2 Thessalonians 3:10. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. They would quote Ezekiel chapter 16. Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom: pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and her daughters. They almost extolled work as a virtue. They ignored the other scriptures where Jesus said about Sodom, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. Haggai condemns the daily labor of the people of his day in their struggle to provide for themselves and their families. He says, ye sow much and bring in little. He that earneth wages to be put into a bag with holes. Ye look for much, and lo, it came to little. And when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why? Saith the Lord of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man to his own house. Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. We see people today in the world working two jobs and going to school for the good of themselves, for the betterment of their families. But brethren and sisters, that does not make them any more godly no more godly than the animals that work all day for their living. They provide for themselves and their young also, but they're not godly. We may ask, as Jesus did, do not even the heathen the same? We can go to China and we can see the people working in the rice paddies from sunup to sundown. Or we can go to the jungles of South America and the work continues with both man and beast. I once conducted a little experiment at the office and I asked people to tell me in 3 minutes or less about themselves. And without fail, each person identified their self with their job. I'm a doctor. I'm a nurse. I'm a therapist. I'm a salesperson. The Protestant work ethic has constructed a society in which participation in work has almost become a goal, or the goal, of life itself. Today's society is beginning to question this concept of work. And we see a decreased number of hours worked and an increase in leisure time. I think most everyone else in this room, was brought up with the Protestant work ethic. I could relate to the fact that leisure was a tool of the devil. Indeed, this idea can be reinforced when we see what the world has to offer us for leisure. A whole industry has sprung up around the increased leisure time that people have. How does the man of God or the woman of God fit into this change in lifestyle? You can open any Sunday paper and find a leisure section or an entertainment section with its display of nightclubs and plays and movies and sports and restaurants. The list goes on endlessly. Concerts, all vying for our leisure time. And on top of that, we're being told by psychologists that it is absolutely essential that we have leisure, that everyone needs to get away more often, relax more. There's a society we're too stressed out. Today, for many people, stress never stops. It's one crisis on top of another crisis, from traffic jams to irate customers to family arguments to job demands and pressures, all superimposed one upon another over ongoing anxieties about money, careers, and any number of other things. People are hurting, and the Brotherhood is not exempt. Stress takes its toll by contributing to a number of physical ailments: heart disease, ulcers, headaches, stomach aches, colitis, high blood pressure. We can go on. It makes asthma attacks worse or brings them on, worsens arthritic pain. It can be said with a fair degree of certainty that stress kills. Now, armed with this information, it is convenient for many Christadelphians, as well as others, to indulge in the leisure activity that the world offers us, with a fair degree of self-justification. I've got to do this. It's really necessary that we do this. And yet, brothers and sisters, what is right? Where do we stand in this work-leisure dichotomy that every one of us must face? In trying to answer this question, I feel like it's a bit like trying to answer the question that the disciples asked Jesus. They ask him, "Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" They started off with an incorrect assumption, and therefore they created a problem that never existed. Something that they considered to be an issue, they never even had to think about. It was not a problem. The supposed problem didn't exist. And so it is, brothers and sisters, with our work-leisure dichotomy that I just created. For the godly man and woman, the problem does not exist. Before I get into what leisure really is, I want to clear up a couple of misconceptions. Misconceptions created by the leisure industry. The industry strives to produce and offer us things to enjoy, things that we can have fun and make us happy. Thus, we have the newspaper section, and it's full of happy things. Smiling people, take a break with a week of museum fun. Another place offering work on a farm where work can be fun. Have fun, be happy. But brothers and sisters, we must clearly realize that in spite of what they are trying to sell us, happiness and enjoyment and fun are very different things, and may, and in fact in many cases, are very different things and have absolutely no relationship one with another. As a child, we equated fun with happiness. If we're having fun, then we're happy. But it's a very, very immature way of understanding happiness. If you need proof for this, look no further than Hollywood. What more could these people want to enjoy life and have fun? They have good looks, they have the sex appeal, money, wealth beyond imagination for anything they want to buy. They have popularity, they have power. They throw these ostentatious parties in exotic places designed to have fun and bring happiness. And yet they are not happy. They are some of the most unhappy people on earth. Drug addiction is rampant among them. Alcoholism, divorce, suicide. We could go on. They are not happy. Brothers and sisters, fun and happiness are very different things. I may have fun eating a big piece of chocolate cake, but does it bring happiness? If I ate too much of it, tomorrow I will be ill and I won't be happy. Or if I eat too much of it and then stand sideways and look in the mirror, it will not bring me happiness, although I may have had fun eating it. We cannot equate fun with happiness. What brings fun may bring sorrow. It may bring unhappiness. And so I say, do not allow the leisure industry's advertisement to con you into thinking that fun can be equated with happiness. They are very different things. Their job, their source of income, is bombarding us with images of happy people having fun. But don't be deceived by their commercials. What about leisure? I first began thinking about the work-leisure dichotomy years ago in a college course that I took on humanities. The professor told a story of a farmer who saw a neighbor, he was an artist, and he was sitting out in the farmer's field painting. And the farmer walks by and says to his neighbor that he had picked a very nice day to take off. And the artist says, no, I'm not taking today off, I'm working. Later on that evening, the farmer walks by the artist's house and sees him out in the backyard in his garden. And the farmer says, oh, now I see you are working. And the artist says, no, now I'm relaxing from my day's work. Now, the professor was trying to get us to understand that two people can be looking at the same thing and come to two different conclusions and both be correct, depending on their perspective. However, I looked at it very differently. It created a question in my mind. What is work? Why couldn't the farmer do gardening as his leisure? And why couldn't the artist paint to get away from it all? The next time I thought about the work-leisure question was, I was a manager at a hospital, and I hired a brother to work in the department. And as a part of his orientation, I took him up into the intensive care unit. We worked with a woman that was on a ventilator. My staff was unable to wean her off the ventilator. So I thought it would be a good opportunity for me to work with this person and also show this new staff member the intensive care unit and the monitoring equipment and what we did, et cetera, et cetera. We went up there, we spent the day, and I kept her off the ventilator all day. And I went home feeling pretty good about myself. I had accomplished something that day. When the brother, however, was asked how work went, he said, oh, we didn't do any work today. I just sat around with Jim all day and we talked to this old lady. And I wondered how two people with the same values, in the same place, at the same time, doing the same thing, came away with two very different opinions. I did a hard day's work. He did the same thing and had a day of leisure. We both did the same thing. In researching this question, I have found it has only been since the Protestant Reformation and the Industrial Revolution that leisure has taken on the concept that it has today. Time has become industrialized. Our whole society is oriented to the clock. Time is equated with money. Like any monetary reward, time is a valuable commodity to be saved, spent, earned, counted. We earn vacation, holiday, days off. Our leisure time that we earn from working. From the moment of birth, everything we see and hear is touched by the clock. We learn that time is valuable, scarce. It ticks off in a straight line, runs steady, evenly, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, impersonal, universal time. And we've lost the natural, reoccurring sense of time that the ancients had. The ebb and flow of the tides, the waxing and waning of the moon, its various phases, the seasons, seed time, harvest, the falling leaf, the thawing ice, the newborn lamb, all are excluded from our industrialized lives as we live day by day, binding ourselves to the clock. Machines have manipulated everyone into living by the dictates of the clock. Most all of us have watches on our arms, for we're slaves to the clock. This country rejects the tyranny of man while it submits to the tyranny of time. The ancients' concept of work and leisure was not related to clockable time. To speak of leisure time to them would be absurd. It would be like me speaking of time to love your family. Love is a condition. Love isn't clockable. We go to work. We do it out of love for our family, to provide for our family. We clean the house. We do it out of love for our family. We provide a room for each of our children, etc., etc. We do all these things out of love. To love one's family by the clock makes no sense to us. We don't think of loving our family, putting a time on it. It's pervasive. And so it was with leisure. Leisure time would make no sense to the ancients at all. Leisure involved a state of being, an attitude, unrelated to a mechanical clock, the same way that love is unrelated to time. Leisure was a condition, and therefore it was not clockable. Within leisure, one may engage in a wide range of activities, including those that are negative, passive, and destructive, or those that are positive, active, self-enriching, constructive. Brothers and sisters, need for leisure may indeed be a reality, but it is no excuse for behavior unfitting to the name we bear. It is not an excuse. The godly man's leisure should not make him an ungodly person. Why did the artist find leisure in doing the farmer's work? Was it not his state of mind? Was it not the attitude and not the activity that made the difference? It was this state of being that the ancients strove for. It would be contradictory of this view to suggest that the problem of leisure is to find occupation for every moment. Leisure was honored. It was not timed. It was not a means to an end. It was an end. It was looked up to as the highest value in the culture. Leisure did not connote loud music, long lines at ticket offices, traffic jams at ball games, expensive vacations that we go on and get ourselves into debt that we ended up paying for the next year. This whole concept of leisure has nothing to do with leisure. Leisure is a state of being. It's only possible when one has their mind around who they are and what their life is about. We must strive for leisure, whether we're at work, like the artist in his gardening, while we're at home and every other time. Leisure does not connote idleness or boredom. These things are contradictory to leisure. The concept of true leisure cannot have boredom and idleness, nor can the fast-paced rat race life of stress that we live today. It's equally contradictory to leisure. Leisure had a spiritual concept, a state of mind that allowed for reflection and meditation, a state of mind which is completely foreign to our society. It is this that many in the youth seek for. They see it lacking in our society. We do not offer it. And so they seek leisure in drug addictions, in alcohol, in the renewal of the occult, in mysticisms, in palm readings, astrologers, various religious cults, looking for that which society does not offer them. Something is missing. Leisure is missing. They're emotionally starved, seeking meaning, trying to find themselves in a rat race society that for work offers only high pressure and strength, and for leisure offers equal high pressure and stress excitement. Sunday evening, I checked into the Stonewall Motel. As soon as I walked in, I saw this flyer, Golf and Leisure Map. As soon as I saw that, I thought of Mr. Ritter. I knew Mr. Ritter's son well. Mr. Ritter was admitted to the intensive care unit, put on a ventilator for 3 days before he died. Mr. Ritter was playing golf with some friends, and he took a shot and got so angry and upset that he popped a blood vessel in his head, and like I say, 3 or 4 days later, died. Was that golf leisure? Golf may be leisure. It may be fun. But it's not the activity that creates the leisure or the fun. In Mr. Ritter's case, leisure was high stress and ended in his death. Leisure, brothers and sisters, is a state of mind. People lose themselves in movies, novels, computer games. We, brothers and sisters, need to lose ourselves in the things concerning the kingdom of God. We can see many examples in the scriptures of men who found leisure in their lives. David understood it. Oh, how love I thy law. It is my meditation all the day. All the day? Right. How about after work? How about it's your meditation while you're on your coffee breaks? It is my meditation all the day. Does that, brothers and sisters, give you the idea that David was lazy, that he was idle, that he was slothful? Of course not. If he had to be up at night with the sheep at lambing time and missed his night's rest, was he too stressed out and needed to get away from it all afterward? No, we see David at night in the field. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy hands, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained. Doesn't sound stressed out to me. But we know he had the problems, the same problem that any farmer has, or any worker in any other industry. David lived a life of leisure. David obtained that state of mind. And I do not mean that he had it easy, or he had a life with no trials or no pressure. Just think of some of the pressures that David had. His own son rebelled against him, turned his own nation, his own army that he formed, turned his army against him. And knowing Nathan's words, that it was because of what he did that all this had come about. How did David respond? Need to take a vacation? Need to get away from it all? Too stressed out? Needed to go to the movies or a ball game or something to get away from it? The state of mind that David was in when Absalom came against him, we see in Psalm 3. Psalm 3, a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many are they which say of my soul, there is no help for him of God. Selah. He's done. His family's turned against him. His country's turned against him. Even God can't help him now. He's done. He's washed up. Talk about stress. David composes a song to sing to God. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of my head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. He did not feel forced to compose another psalm at a time like this. What, are you crazy? You want me to write a psalm? Look what's going on. You expect me to sit down and write something and sing a song now? I have too much on my mind. I can't even think straight. How can I do something like that? No, David found a necessary leisure in his meditation of God. That was his leisure. That's how he got through the stress. What did Paul mean yesterday in our Romans class when he exhorted us to be patient in tribulation? Doesn't that sound contradictory? We're in tribulation. We're stressed out. Be patient in tribulation. We see many times in David's life the same thing. This was not just an isolated situation. Psalm 18. A psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, who spake unto the Lord the words of this song, in the day that the Lord delivered him from the hand of Saul. And he said, I will love thee, O Lord, and my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my buckler and the horn of my salvation and my high tower. Psalm 34, a psalm of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech, who drove him away and he departed. Imagine that, writing a song when you're in your enemy's hands, captured. How about Psalm 51? To the chief musician, a song of David, when Nathan the prophet came unto him after he had gone in unto Bathsheba. Have we ever been spoken to by a brother or sister correcting us on something that we have done wrong? How do we feel? Isn't it first anger, self-defense? David's response, a psalm of prayer. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according unto the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from mine iniquity and cleanse me from my sins. For I acknowledge my transgression and my sin is before me. Against thee, thee only, have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mayest be justified when thou speakest and be cleared when thou judgest. Psalm 52. To the chief musician, a psalm of David, when Doeg the Edomite came and told Saul and said unto him, David is come to the house of Ahimelech. He was fleeing for his life, and somebody turned him in. How would we feel then? He was betrayed. His response? Another psalm. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief? O mighty man, the goodness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue devises mischiefs, like a sharp razor working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than speaking righteousness. Psalm 54. To the chief musician, a psalm of David, when the Ziphims came and said to Saul, doth not David hide himself with us? Again, betrayed by the people that he just delivered from the hands of the Philistines. He just saved their city, and they turned around and delivered him into the hand of Saul. Save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength. Hear my prayer, O God. Give ear to the words of my mouth. How about Psalm 56? To the chief musician, when the Philistines took him at Gath. Be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He fighteth daily, oppresses me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me, O thou Most High. What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. One more, Psalm 57, to the chief musician. When David fled from Saul in the cave, be merciful unto me, O God, be merciful unto me, for my soul trusteth in thee. Yea, in the shadow of thy wings I will make my refuge until these calamities be overpassed. And he ends with these words, be thou exalted, O God, above the heavens, let thy glory be above all the earth. Oh, how love I thy law. It is my meditation all the day. Paul says, Philippians 4, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. He saw no need to get away from it all. No need to look up any of these kind of things to see what he should do. To relax, to get away from all the stress that he was under. He learned what leisure was. A state of mind that he obtained just like David, just like any godly man or woman should do. He says, I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. And we see the ultimate example in Christ. Brother Bob read it this morning in our readings. He finished the Passover with his disciples. He was about to be scourged and mocked and crucified. My peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let it be afraid. And then that verse that Brother Bob read, arise, let us be going. The hand of him that crucifieth me is at hand. He knew what was going to happen, but it was that peace. Leisure? Yes, leisure. Walk right into the trap that he knew was waiting for him. He was not uptight, stressed out. He poured out his heart in prayer and then moved on, come what may. It didn't matter. He was prepared. Leisure should not be something that we spend time on. Leisure time is no such thing. It should be a state of mind that we have obtained because we are children of God. As a brother and sister in Christ, always content, not caught up in the rat race of a busy life, nor caught up in the rat race of the entertainment industry in a vain attempt to find happiness through entertainment. Brothers and sisters, David got it right. And he says in Psalm 144, yea, happy is that people whose Elohim is Yahweh.